Blog Talk Radio. Movie Geeks United is on the air. Tonight, the Movie Geeks talk screenwriting with two distinguished guests. First up, his recent book, The Working Screenwriter, has been flying off the shelves, and his website of screenwriting do's and don'ts have enlightened tens of thousands of struggling writers. The Movie Geeks speak to Jim Vines for a little screenwriting 101. Then, he's written sensational screenplays for films like Autumn in New York and next week's release of Resurrecting the Champ, starring Samuel Jackson, Allison Burnett, and our Flick Picks of the Week. Got a question for the Movie Geeks or any of tonight's guests? Give us a call at 718-508-9477. Get ready. It's time to get your geek on. Here are your hosts for Movie Geeks United, Jamie, Chris, and Jerry.
Welcome to the 26th episode of Movie Geeks United. Isn't that something, guys? 26 episodes already.
That's amazing.
It's great. It's great. My name is Jamie, and Jerry, the person that just said that's amazing, he's right there. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, what's up?
And Chris is here as well. Hey, Chris.
Word.
How's everybody doing this weekend?
Okay.
Well, that sounds really exciting right there.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm just giving you a neutral answer. Nothing, you know, not bad, not good, you know.
We have an exciting show tonight. I've been wanting to do a show like this for many months, all centered around the world of screenwriting. Now, screenwriting, Jerry, have you tried your hand at screenwriting before?
Yes, I have. I've taken many screenwriting courses over the it's been 15 years. Many different seminars. I've taken the famous Robert McKay seminar, and as many people know, Brian Cox played him in Adaptation, and I have to say, he's dead on in that film. That's what Robert McKay is really like, folks. You know, give Brian Cox just some sort of award right there for that performance alone.
Does he actually say that narration is sloppy, flaccid writing?
He also says that none of us really work also. So he says that none of us work a real job. We all, like, sort of just lounge and are lazy at our jobs. I'll never forget that. He got a lot of boos at that part of the seminar.
Wow. Chris, how about you? Have you tried your hand at screenwriting at all?
No, not really. Not seriously. No.
I've done four or five feature-length screenplays. I've tried my hand at them and written a couple of shorts, but nothing serious. But I did something interesting. My problem is when I write, I tend to try to edit myself as I write. That's torture. You can't do that. So I tried a little exercise to see if I could write a script in a week. And I did, and I finished it, and I read back, and it was some of the best dialogue and best scene work that I've ever done, because I didn't censor myself during the process. It was kind of the equivalent of just letting my brain just soar. You know,
that's a good way to do it.
Onto the page. So just a couple of notes before we get to our first guest this evening. You can subscribe to our show by iTunes. Click on the iTunes icon on the right-hand side of the Blog Talk Radio screen. It'll take you to all of our shows currently available on iTunes. It's free to subscribe. You'll never miss a minute of the show. It's a great service. You can also have Movie Geeks United on your personal website, your blog, your MySpace profile. If you'd like your very own Movie Geeks United broadcast, just drop us an email at our MySpace page or at moviegeeksunited@yahoo.com, and we will send you the code. It's a really attractive little player. You see it on our website. All metallic silver. It's like a little mini RoboCop. It's great. All right. Our first guest tonight, we're very excited about this. His name is Jim Vines. He's the author of The Working Screenwriter. You know, the journeys of the novice screenwriter can make for one hell of a bumpy road, delivering more than an unfair share of rejection, frustration, and discouragement. But that road can also result in creative, professional, and financial triumphs if you stay the course. Just ask any writer fortunate enough to find themselves working in films today. And in this recent book I just mentioned, Q&A, The Working Screenwriter, an in-the-trenches perspective of writing movies in today's film industry, author Jim Vines does just that. interviewing 16 scribes who make a consistent living writing terrific films like Tremors, The Crow, and The Prince and Me. Actually, tonight's second guest, Allison Burnett, is just one of the terrific talents featured in this book. Jim Vines is himself a working screenwriter, and through his website, theworkingscreenwriter.com, he dispenses invaluable advice to many thousands of budding screenwriters, discussing everything from avoiding on-the-nose dialogue to protecting your finished work. It is a great pleasure to welcome to the show Mr. Jim Vines. Mr. Vines, are you there?
Yeah, Jamie, hi.
Hey, not great to speak to you. We've been in contact off and on for the past month, it seems, and it's great to finally have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Why don't we start? Tell me a little bit about your journey to becoming a working screenwriter.
Well, I guess we'd have to, you know, go back to maybe when I was 11, mid-70s, you know, making Super 8 movies in my backyard. I wasn't that much into writing at that time because, you know, back then we were just basically coming up with ideas and then just filming them. It wasn't until I got into high school when I had the opportunity to write and direct and produce and act in my own TV show. Because the high school I went to had this wonderful TV department, and for 4 years, all I basically did was write and direct and act and do these shows, and we just had the best time. And I really kind of learned. Actually, back then it was more sketch comedy, but I did try my hand at some screenplays, sort of toying around. So actually, I still have some of those screenplays. But, I kind of learned about structure, and I actually found some screenplays in the garbage of a house. This is Beverly Hills, so most of the people in Beverly Hills are in the film industry. So I found in this one garbage can about, 20 screenplays.
Uh-huh.
So I dug them all out, took them home, and then just studied them. I read them and just kind of picked them apart and saw how they were kind of put together.
What kind of screenplays were these?
I can't help it.
I don't remember. I actually have a couple of them stashed away somewhere. But I mean, they're movie screenplays. I don't think any of them were actually produced.
Right, right.
Anyway, so it gave me the opportunity to see how scripts were written and structured. And I guess reading those scripts back then. This is 30 years ago, almost 30 years ago. And it just sort of seeped in and kind of stayed with me until later on after high school. Way after high school, about 15 years ago, or almost 20 years ago now, actually sitting down and writing for a professional attempt of a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And, I still have those screenplays. I look at them now, and they weren't too bad. But, that was my early education. This is back before all the books, this is way before the Internet and you had everything at your fingertips, so you had to kind of just figure it out on your own, and I'm happy to say that I did.
There are a lot of kind of how-to screenwriting books out there.
Right.
What in particular did you find valuable and necessary about your book, The Working Screenwriter?
Well, for me, interviews have always been a big source of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about reading how William Goldman or whoever's had some success in this business, how do they work? What's their process? That to me has always been a lot more helpful than, you need to put the first act here, the second act over there.
That's just
technical. That's very left brain. I'm very right brain. I'm a little bit more creative, a little bit more organic.
Mm-hmm.
So. All the screenwriting books, as far as I'm concerned, have been written. They all talk about the structure, the paradigms, the plot points, and all that stuff. That stuff we know, or we should know. But for me, what gets me into my chair every day, or what gets a lot of people in front of their computers every day, is the inspirational stories of how such and such writer sold their first script.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing works a lot better for me than the other stuff, which, again, there's 400 books out there on screenwriting, and they all basically say the same thing.
Yeah.
But a book like mine, an interview book, is unique. It's telling stories that usually haven't really been told before.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree with you. I get so much more out of a Q&A book than I do any other kind of book.
Right.
And this one is a prime example of that. The many talented, just tremendous talents that you compiled for this book. How did you go about finding them?
I got on the internet. I did Google searches of, you know, movies I liked or movies I knew of, or
yeah.
A couple of these people I knew through other people. Allison Burnett was a friend of a producer friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked my producer friend, hey, can you get me Allison Burnett? And then that happened. So then, there was another writer in the book. Same thing happened. I just made a phone call, and 10 minutes later, you know, I asked them. What's funny is all these writers I asked, there was only one writer that I asked who didn't want to participate for one reason or another. But every one of these writers, it's funny because writers never get interviewed for the most part. No one cares.
Yeah.
You know, the general public doesn't care. But writers, they have something to say, and they want to be heard. And every one of these writers was so enthusiastic and so eager, and they all wanted to say what they wanted to say, and it was wonderful. And I can tell you, Allison Burnett, I think I contacted him at, let's say, noon. By 6 p.m., his interview was done. I mean,
oh wow!
You know, it just flowed out of him. You know, and this is why he's a success, because he gets stuff done. You know, he gets stuff done, and you know, he's very professional. And that's one thing about all these writers, is that they're not only just very nice people. You know, they're just very professional, very focused.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big thing for if you want to be a screenwriter, you have to be very focused, very professional.
Mm-hmm.
You can't act like a child. And, you know, I found that, you know, in my travels along the internet and wherever, you know, meeting screenwriters, the ones that succeed are the ones that are very focused,
mm-hmm.
very professional, very adult about their writing. And they don't spend all their time on the internet, you know, on bulletin boards, you know, screaming and yelling about how they can't get work and how no one's treating them with respect. And,
right.
You know, that's not the way. That's not the way you want to act if you want to be a screenwriter.
Right.
Yeah,
what you have to do is you have to sit yourself down and write scripts.
That's the number one thing to keep in mind if you want to be a writer. You must write.
You have to write every day. Have to
yeah.
Have to
well, you know, I've known my fair share of writers who excuse me, they spend so much time, you know, on the internet and checking email and.
Yeah.
Whatnot, and they say, you know, I can't get. I say, well, how much have you written today? Well, I didn't really get anything written. Well, why not? Well, I was busy with something. You know, it's like stop making.
No, you
got to
have a product, though. You got to.
Yeah,
have...
exactly. And believe me, I've known so many people that, you know, I met them, let's say 3 years ago, and I talked to them, you know, yesterday, and I say, so what have you written in 3 years? Well, I'm still working on this one script. Well, you've had 3 years. What have you been doing?
Now, when you interviewed your subjects, their thoughts on the writing process or their philosophies about the craft, were any of them kind of wildly different, or did they all fall in line and were similar to each other?
I would say they all kind of fell in line, I think. Again, you know, just very professional people with a focus, with a goal, with a you-can't-stop-me attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the kind of the one through line with all these writers is they just, nothing was going to stop them. But they, you know, if people talk about talent and luck and all this stuff, I think either you're born with it or you're not. Because I do a lot of critiques. I've done a lot of critiques in the last several years.
Mm-hmm.
And 99%, probably more than 99% of all these scripts have just been really bad. And there's a reason for that, because everyone thinks they're going to write a script. Everyone's seen movies. Everyone has the software. Everyone thinks they can just sit down and crank out a script.
Mm-hmm.
But these people, they don't really have the talent. At least they don't have quite what it takes at this point in the game to write a professional script. But the people who, like the people in my book, they're born with it. I truly think they're born with it. Now, could I say that I was born with it? I can say that I was born creative. I certainly know that. I'm definitely a very creative person. Always have been.
Mm-hmm.
I could never, even now, I can't consider myself a writer. I find that hard to even say. People ask me what I do. I'm doing what I'm doing now. I laugh and say, yeah, I'm a screenwriter. It's just, if you know, when I went to my 25th high school reunion last year, you know, people said, so what are you doing? And no one could believe it because I was such a goofball in high school, in elementary school. That,
good for
you
is all I can say.
Yeah, the
good
idea
for
of me.
You.
But I had something inside me that wanted to create.
Right.
And if you want to make films, a great way to create is to write your own scripts.
Right.
So I had to sit down again. You know, I read those scripts when I was a kid, but I had to teach myself how to write. But looking back on the scripts I wrote, you know, 15, 20 years ago, reading them now, and I can say, you know, these really weren't so bad. So there was that initial basic talent.
Mm-hmm.
I had it. I just had to develop it. But there are some people that have no talent. I hate to say this. I don't want to upset anyone, you know, piss people off. But there are just people out there that just have no talent, and they will never sell a screenplay.
Does it start with being a good storyteller?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you have to, being a good storyteller, coming up with stories that people would want to see. I mean, believe me, I've been pitched and I've read scripts of stories that, you know, talking shopping carts. What is this? You know, I'm serious. I mean,
no, he's absolutely right. I've heard this from many people who work at agencies and production companies. I mean, Jim is just telling it like it is.
Yeah.
I mean, and look, now I'm starting to sound like a broken record because I usually say all this, you know, with every interview I've done. But there's nothing wrong with writing a bad screenplay. There's nothing wrong with it. Certainly, I've written my share of bad screenplays, you know, early on, and probably still. But the problem comes is when you take that lousy screenplay and you decide to send it to a producer or an actor or whoever, and say, "Hey, look at my screenplay. I want to get this made, or you know, I think it's really good." You just burned a bridge because that lousy screenplay just went out to people in the business. They'll never read your stuff again.
Yeah.
Because believe me, they are bombarded with bad scripts on a daily basis. This is why producers and agents and whatnot, they don't accept scripts because they know that 99%, and that number, 99%, you can ask pretty much any agent or producer and they will agree with that. They will say, yeah, about 99%. Any reader in town will tell you that. So don't write that bad script and then just, you know, do a quick rewrite and send it off thinking, oh, you know, I'm just going to write my own ticket. You know, make sure you get it proofed and you get it, you know, read by a, you know, professional, someone, you know, not your teacher, you know, just a script consultant or someone in the business that knows scripts. Some will charge you money and some won't, but, you know, get it looked at by a professional eye and, you know, find out if it's something that could be sent out. And usually it's not. And you have to be willing to do the rewrite work. Mm-hmm. Most people aren't. Most people will not sit down and spend the next month or two or three or five or however many months it takes to do that rewrite.
Right.
And that's when you know if you're a screenwriter. If you're not willing to do the work, you're not a screenwriter.
Yeah, they say that writing is rewriting.
That's exactly it.
Writing again and again. I want to talk to you about your website is fantastic. I want to talk to you about a few of these common mistakes that novice screenwriters tend to make, starting with the on-the-nose dialogue.
Right.
I think this is a tremendous challenge. To resist the urge to spell out the subtext of a scene,
right.
But still allow it to come through somehow. Can you give us an example of how this has been done, either from your own work or from another screenplay, where the subtext is there but it's not explicitly expressed?
Well, I mean, you could pick up any professional screenplay, and I'm sure I have one here around here somewhere. I'm not going to take the time to look through it, but, I mean, I give you an example of on-the-nose dialogue, which would be, you know, husband and wife in a room, and the wife says, "I'm not happy anymore. I want a divorce. I'm leaving tonight. You know, you'll be hearing from my lawyer."
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, that's pretty on-the-nose. How a professional might handle that, see if I can think of something real quick, is just having them, the husband and wife, sitting at a table, you know, maybe staring off into space, and we sense that there's something wrong between them. And the husband says, "It hasn't been all that bad, has it?" And then the wife says, "I'll you'll be hearing from my lawyer. You know, just, you know what I'm saying? It's
yeah,
not,
I know.
It's
yeah.
not direct.
Right.
It's kind of skirting around the issue. It's not saying exactly what these people are thinking.
You know, when you said that, I was thinking, you know, movies are obviously a visual medium, but some people still have to be reminded of that.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, I just did a critique. I've done several. For some reason, I've done several in the last couple of weeks, and pretty much pulling my hair out. But no, that's fine. That's fine. I don't mind doing it.
But you were saying that, and I was thinking of the scene from Citizen Kane, where he's sitting at the breakfast table with his wife, and just from a purely visual aspect, it expresses all of that as they fade into subsequent mornings, and they grow farther and farther apart at the table.
Exactly, and that's another thing. I mean, you could do the scene with, you know, maybe you start the movie with them, you know, cuddling up together on the couch, watching movies, eating popcorn, and mm-hmm. then throughout the movie, you literally see them becoming farther apart, you know, getting farther apart. You know, you by the end of the movie, you know, they're on complete opposite ends of the house.
Yeah.
You know, you do things visually. And that's another thing, as you were saying just a minute ago, is people don't realize that this is a visual medium. I mean, so many of these scripts I critique, they're like plays. I mean, it's just blocks and blocks
yeah.
and blocks and blocks of dialogue, and that's not what people want to read, especially when that dialogue is all on the nose, you know, and has nothing to do with the script or the story, you know. I mean, you want to see something going on in their eyes. You want to feel the tension going on. That you need to learn how to write into a screenplay format.
Well, that is a particular challenge for the low budget screenwriter. They tell you to be wary of multiple locations, or you know, if you're working.
Well, yeah,
on a
I mean,
screen.
Yeah, it depends what kind of low budget we're talking about. I mean, if you're doing some direct to cable thriller, yeah, they want you to keep it down to, you know, 5-6 locations, you know, maybe 10 characters tops in the mm-hmm. whole, you know, whatever. Then you have real low budget where they want it in one location with two characters or three characters.
Yeah.
You know, but I have a script right now that, you know, with a little bit of luck, knock on wood, is going into production later this year. It's been a real roller coaster ride on this one, folks, I'll tell you. But, you know, it's two people in one location. And that's what sold the script is, you know, well, we could do this for pretty cheap and just concentrate on the visuals and the tension and, you know, and that's what the script is all about.
If you could talk a little bit about the process of once you have a script that you've had good professional feedback on and you're ready to take that next step, how do you take that next step? I know that you've said that one of the major questions that you've always been asked is concerning finding an agent.
Right.
What are the pitfalls that you should look for when you're shopping around for an agent, and how does one go about finding the right one?
Well, I think the big mistake people make is they think, oh, if I have an agent, you know, I'm there. Well, that's not true. First of all, for the most part, there's no agent that's going to take on someone with no track record. If you haven't got a track record, if you haven't written anything before it's been produced, or if you've only got one script, it's very rare for an agent to take you on, because you're not proven,
mm-hmm.
and you know, for them to invest a lot of time in you, they're just not going to do it. I'm not saying that's 100% of the time, but it's very rare. So I wouldn't really waste my time or spend my time going out looking for an agent right off the bat. What I would do is, first you make sure your script is top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've rewritten it, you've had it looked at, you know, a couple few times by a script consultant, you've corrected all your typos, all that good stuff, it's ready to go. You know, if you live in L.A., you need to hit the streets and meet people.
Mm-hmm.
This is what this business is all about. It's all about
who you know.
Right.
You know, and who knows you, and making FaceTime with people, people in the industry, and you need to, you know, meet them and be professional. I've known writers who say, well, I'm going to walk up and down the street with a sandwich board, you know, around my neck, saying, you know, screenwriter for hire. Well, you know, that might work, but chances are the people are just going to look at you like a nutcase.
Right.
Yeah.
What you need to do is get involved with people, and say, hey, you know, I have this script. Can you read it? And they'll say yes, usually, and they'll read it. And if it's a good script, they might not say, well, I want to buy this, I want to make it, but they might say, hey, you're a good writer. And they'll keep you in mind a year from now and say, hey, have you got anything else? You know, can I read something else? And by then you should have another script written. I mean, if you're going to go out, you should have at least two scripts, good scripts written. You know, the more the merrier. If people look at you as a guy who's written one script and they say, well, what else have you got? And you say, well, I don't have anything, but hey, I got ideas for scripts. And they say, well, we're not looking for ideas. We're looking for completed scripts.
Right.
But so if you're in L.A., you just need to hit the streets, get involved with film clubs, screening events, you know, anything to get where the people are in the film industry. And
you can write material from anywhere in the world, but you believe it's essential that a screenwriter live in the L.A. area?
I think so. I mean, I really do. I mean, you know, look, if you want to be in the film industry, for better or worse, this is where it's at. You know, sure, there's stuff going on in Canada, maybe in New York, you know.
But think it's there.
In L.A., yeah. I'm out every day. I'm at a Starbucks, and there are people talking movies. I've seen big actors, directors hanging out at Starbucks. This is where the people are. This is where the studios are. This is where it's happening.
I want to just say something. I agree with you 100%, but it's very daunting because everyone in Los Angeles, at least I would have to say one out of everyone has like a screenplay in their desk somewhere, you know.
Look, I was at Starbucks 2 days ago and I met, I was working on something and this guy sitting next to me, he was working on a script. And when I was done with what I was doing, he leaned over and said, anyway, he had just won a Disney fellowship.
Oh, okay.
And we got to talking and, you know, he seemed very smart and talented and seemed like he was on the right track. Yes, there are people like that, but those are few and far between. Most of the people in this town, most of the people writing scripts are either just saying they're writing scripts and aren't, or they are writing scripts, but it's going to take them 20 years to get it done.
Right.
Or they've completed scripts, but they all suck. They're all bad scripts.
Right.
Very few have actually written really good scripts.
No, and I agree with you, Jim. I agree with you 100% because that is, you need to be there. I have a friend who works at Touchstone, but he always said, if you're really serious about it, you can't do it from Silver Spring, Maryland. You have to be in Los Angeles.
Right.
It's the only way it's going to ever work, if it works.
Exactly. And you can talk to people, and people will bitch and complain, saying, oh, well, I live in Iowa, and I sell my script. Well, sure, it can happen, but you have to be a really good writer, I think. I mean, you can do anything, especially nowadays. I mean, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you couldn't get on the Internet and start. You know, everything I do is usually through the Internet, through, you know, email and whatnot.
Right.
But if you're willing to, you know, make phone calls and get on the Internet and start getting to the people who can read your script and you send them a really great script and you're in Iowa, then you're doing pretty good for yourself. Problem is, more power to you. Yeah, most of these people don't have good scripts. And no matter where they are, you know, it's not going to work for them. But, yeah, I mean, look, get your great scripts written, save up some money, come to L.A., hit the streets, start meeting people. Don't think so much about the agents and the managers because, again, they're not going to really want to talk to you or touch you, you know. So get that first script under your belt. Get some great scripts written. Then approach the agents and say, hey, this is what I've done. Read my scripts. And then, you know, hopefully you'll be on your way. It's still going to be tough, but, you know, you're going to be in a much better position. But you have to make your own luck. You have to get out there and really sell yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Do you think that the clout or the influence of the screenwriter within the industry has improved at all?
Oh, I think it's improved. Certainly they're getting more notoriety, and certainly you know, you have these writers who have transitioned from film to TV and then back to film. You know, and they've done some great motion pictures, and then they've done some great stuff on TV, and then that's when they really get noticed, because in TV, the writer is king, you know, and then they go back to their film career. But again, that's, you know, that's a couple few people, you know, it's not going to be everyone.
Right. Well, what can we expect from you in the future?
Ooh, all sorts of good things, I hope. Well, I'm working on stuff. You know, I got, you know, as they say, in various stages of development. I've got two or three film projects, you know, waiting for a green light or financing to come through.
Right.
You know, the usual story. So it's just a waiting game, and that's something you have to really get used to if you're a writer. You know, you have to have patience because this stuff takes a long time. But, you know, I'm working on, you know, like two or three scripts. I'm just always working on something, and, you know, I love it. I love doing it. And that's another thing. If you're gonna be in this business, you're not doing it for a big paycheck. You're not doing it to meet girls. You're not doing it, you know, to drive the fancy car. You're doing it because you love to do it.
For the love of it, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Vines, I appreciate you appearing on our show so much, and you've given us a lot of information to chew on, and just thank you so much.
Thank
you. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye now. That's Jim Vines, author of The Working Screenwriter. And also visit theworkingscreenwriter.com. It's an excellent website, just very informative stuff there. And his book is fantastic. Very spirited conversation.
Yes.
So how are you guys, what do you guys think about that? Chris?
Well, you know, the thing I agree with most is that if you don't have the talent, if you truly don't have the talent, and people know deep down in their hearts whether or not they have the talent,
right.
And if you don't, you don't need to be writing screenplays.
Right, absolutely.
Like, you know, a lot of people are out there, and it sucks, it sounds harsh, but a lot of people are out there just literally kidding themselves, like just lying to themselves. Oh, yeah, oh, this is so original what I'm writing here. It's not, and you know it's not. And everyone you show it to reads it and kind of winces and says, oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
But
like my screenplays when I show them to you.
Well,
I don't know if that's true. I've never seen them, but I don't know.
They're locked in a vault somewhere.
Okay.
believe me. All right, gentlemen, our next guest is on the line. Our next guest is here, and he is quickly becoming one of the most in-demand screenwriters in the industry. Within the next year alone, three of his works will hit the big screen, including the Robert Benton-directed film Feast of Love, starring Morgan Freeman, Untraceable, starring Diane Lane under the direction of Gregory Hoblit, and this Friday's release of the Samuel Jackson, Josh Hartnett film Resurrecting the Champ. His work in that film, Resurrecting the Champ, is receiving raves from critics across the country, including Dwayne Burge of The Hollywood Reporter, who praises his weaving of a touchingly vibrant tale. This incredible streak follows many years pinning films like Autumn in New York, Bleeding Hearts, Perfect Romance, and the Slam Dance Festival and Sundance Channel favorite Red Meat, a picture he also directed. He is also a highly accomplished poet and novelist whose debut novel, Christopher, was a finalist for the 2004 Penn Center USA Literary Award in Fiction. It is a great pleasure to welcome Mr. Allison Burnett to our show. Mr. Burnett?
Thank you very much for that introduction.
Well, thank you for being with us tonight. We really appreciate
it. I never heard it read out loud like that. I'm kind of impressed with myself right now.
Well, we wanted to give you an intro that was worthy of you, so we appreciate you being on the show so much. I want to ask you something right off the bat. There was a big story in the trades about a week or two ago. Let me read this little blurb to you and get your thoughts on it. Several of Hollywood's top screenwriters are banding together as collectives to negotiate deals with studios under which they accept lower upfront fees for their scripts, but receive a percentage of the movie's gross plus greater control over the material. I believe these screenwriters have partnered together. They formed a group called Writing Partners. And each writer receives a $300,000 fee for his script, 2.5% of the gross, and will have a say over which notes from the studio's brass he'll be willing to accept and whether to allow another writer to come on board to work on his script. What are your impressions of that? Do you sense that the screenwriters are beginning to turn a corner with this and demanding the kind of clout and influence they so deserve?
Well, it's a wonderful idea. I'm not part of that. I think the requirement to be part of that is that when you do an assignment for the studios, you're paid $1 million. And I think that's the... that is the first requirement to be a part of that group, and I'm not quite at that level yet. A lot of the work I've been doing in the last 2.5 years is for a company called Lakeshore.
Mm-hmm.
And your listeners might know it because, you know, it's a little boy running and jumping into a pond.
Right.
Exactly.
Beginning of movies. And Lakeshore has a really wide range of material, from genre movies to the most serious adult dramas. And the guy that runs it is named Tom Rosenberg, and he's a brilliant man and really, really smart and committed to making movies as intelligent as they can be, and that includes the genre movies they do. And, you know, sometimes that communicates to the screen, and sometimes it doesn't. There are a lot of variables. But one of the things that the rewards I get for working for them is that I don't take notes from very many people. Tom is intimately involved in the writing in the notes, and his notes are great, so I like taking them. And they pay less than a studio, but they actually make the movies that I write.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest gift of all, because I had been in Hollywood working hard for 17 years, and in that time I'd only had one studio movie made, and that was Autumn in New York. And that movie was pretty much deeply maimed because Richard Gere was the star of it, and he had a lot of script control, and he brought in a rewriter a few days before shooting.
Yeah.
And it really scarred the script. And ironically, that movie was made by Tom Rosenberg when he was sort of first beginning to get really involved in movies. And so he learned a lesson from that, which is that you don't let anyone tamper with the script once it's ready to be shot, not even a movie star or not even the director. And so he really not only is making the movies I'm writing, but he's protecting them, which is crucial, because most people don't realize this, but the reason that most movies stink is not because writers are talentless or producers are stupid. It's because they turn over the keys to the kingdom to actors and the director. And they come in late, and very often, it doesn't matter who they are, it's never going to work because they're doing it hastily. Actors don't have the objectivity to see the entire movie. If they do, they're probably not very good actors. Most actors are subjective creatures, and they see things from the point of view of their character.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not a good recipe for rewriting.
Right.
So, you know, so I mean, I know a friend of mine got a call from a famous director, and he was near tears. And he said, you know, right now Julia Roberts is in the other room rewriting my script with two fingers, you know, at her computer. And this goes on all the time. And people don't, and no one wants to talk about it because, of course, they don't want to alienate, you know, movie stars.
Right.
Anyway, that's not how it works at Lakeshore. So Feast of Love is the first movie I had made with Lakeshore. And the script is I would say 92%, 95% intact.
Wow.
Benton made a few little changes here and there, but even a famous guy like Benton was not allowed to have carte blanche in any way.
You find that the best directors, I would think, have a large respect for the screenwriter.
I wish that was
I would think
true.
Someone like
you
Benton
know?
Does.
Well, you would, but you know, remember he's a writer too.
Right.
So you've got not only his instincts as a director, but you've also got his more powerful instincts as a writer. And, you know, and I think there's a real argument that's to be said that, you know, very rarely if a script has really, really been written by someone of some vision and worked on really hard and every comma and every cross T has been put in place, very rarely is it going to be made better by someone rewriting on the fly as they're moving into production. And when that started to happen, Tom absolutely forbade it and said, you know, we didn't hire you to direct, I mean, to write, we hired you to direct. And so Benton did a great job. And I think ultimately, by having those limits put on him, it was actually to his benefit. Because, you know, directors have a lot of anxiety when they're shooting. And very often that anxiety can translate into impetuous rewriting or letting actors have too much leeway on the set. And so I think that's one reason. I mean, I've seen Feast of Love, and writers are always the most critical of the final movie. And I think they did a great job. I think it's a wonderful movie, and
looks
I'm very proud of it.
Looks great from the trailer.
Yeah, and by the way, the trailer, you know, isn't quite accurate.
Okay.
You know, what I mean is the good qualities of the movie visually and the good qualities in the acting come through. But I think when you see the trailer, you kind of feel it's a little bit of a crowd-pleasing chick flick and maybe a little bit sentimental. And I think that's probably just a marketing thing because the actual movie is really almost sort of existential. And it's got serious adult scenes and it's got full frontal nudity. It even has the C word in it. I mean, it's heavy, and it's got lots of romanticism. It does have comedy, but it's a 1970s style adult movie that's a lot more like, you know, Colonel Knowledge than it is like You've Got Mail.
You just sold me even more. The trailer was good, but what you just said just sold me even more. Okay, that's good. That's good.
I think there are going to be other trailers that later, closer to the day when it opens, that will be focused on an indie audience and the people that will go see the movie I'm describing that will do that. But for the general thing, I think they felt that to get people in the seats, they stressed the romanticism. But at the end when it goes, the Feast of Love, I mean, it really isn't like that.
Okay.
It's really good.
That's good to know. That's good to know. Okay.
Yeah, there's some wonderful acting, wonderful ensemble acting. But, you know, just getting back to what you were saying about, you know, I wish it were true, but a lot of directors have very big egos. And it's a very weird thing. You know, you're on the set, and you're being treated like God all day. And yet you know that if there is a God, it's on that page, because that page is what is unifying all the collaborators.
Absolutely.
And that can be a very galling thing for the ego of a director to know that they know in their hearts that if they cast this correctly, mm-hmm. that 75% of their work is finished between the script and the casting. And so it's very, very common to want to mess with the script so you can go home and tell your wife, you know, oh, I did a rewrite today and I saved the scene and it's so much better now than what the writer did. And there's a lot of egos going on that all want to be the person that thought it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I feel very blessed to be working at Lakeshore. They made that one. They made Untraceable, which I'm in an arbitration on that. So even though I did 14 drafts of it, until the Writers Guild tells me that I get credit, I can't relax and enjoy my participation in that movie.
Oh, wow.
Because I came in, it was a script that had been around for about 6 years, and I did a ton of work on it. And I would be very suicidal if I lost this arbitration. But one of the original writers decided to contest because there's a lot of money at stake, and so writers usually do contest the credit. But anyway, I'm going to consider Untraceable Mind for the purposes of our conversation.
Well, we definitely want to talk about Untraceable. That's it. And talk about something positive for just a second.
I'll try. Yeah, let me.
Well,
let me,
yeah,
adjust.
I know that the world of the screenwriter is very treacherous. But how thrilling is it for you? Talk about the thrills of doing it. How thrilling is it for you to see to hear a Morgan Freeman or a Samuel Jackson owning
really,
your dialogue?
It's really thrilling. And I'll tell you, especially when you've been doing it, you know, for 17 years and you haven't really seen big budget productions, to see your dream. I mean, I one day said, you know, I want to take these two characters in the novel Beast of Love and I want to combine them into one character. And I said, you know, I want to write it so that like a Morgan Freeman will want to play this. And then 12 weeks later, Morgan Freeman's agreed to play the role. It's an incredible feeling.
Yeah.
And Greg Kinnear, and oh my God, like, you know, this is the most exciting time in my professional life, because it's all coming together now. And you know, a lot of it is because of Lakeshore. They already have another one of my movies in the pipeline. And right now I'm writing Fame for them. They're going to do a remake of Fame.
Oh, you're kidding, really?
No.
Wow.
With the same commitment to reality, to not patronizing the lives of young people, really telling the truth about these young people's lives, and they want that in theaters in a year, and I'm writing it right now. So
now this isn't what I've read Simon Cowell talking about, is it?
No, and I think no, it certainly isn't, and I can't imagine what their version will be like.
Right.
This is going to be a real antidote to all that kind of, you know, teenagers portrayed as cartoons.
Right.
That you see in almost every movie. It's really going to. That's what makes Fame so special, I think, is that it showed the lives of young people. And with a great deal of respect.
Are you maintaining it as a musical?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes, and I'm even going to use a lot of the original structure, but I'm going to invent all the characters will be new.
Interesting.
I think it'll feel fresh and modern, and yet still have the virtues of the original. So so getting back to this, is a great time, and they're also going to make a movie of mine called The Venetian Affair, which is based on a book, a true story about lovers in 1753 Venice who were kept apart by class and station. And it's really a romantic period drama. And again, really like at a very high caliber, I think, of maturity and sophistication. And, you know, Lakeshore is like the only people, they're the only company right now that is consistently making movies for grown-ups. And so I'm thrilled to be part of their company, and I'm just going to keep working for them until the wheels fall off.
Yeah, it sounds like a great, great relationship, a great partnership. Tell me a little bit about Resurrecting the Champ. This is taken from an article from the LA Times, was it?
Yeah,
by a guy named
J.R. Moringer, who wrote a book called The Tender Bar, which is being made into a movie. He wrote this article for the Sunday magazine of the LA Times 10 years ago, and I was brought in as the first writer, and so this is a 10-year process, which is just miraculous that it ever became a movie and became a good one.
Yeah.
And I wrote the original draft, and we had Morgan Freeman, ironically, attached to play the Sam Jackson role. And it stayed that way for years, and then other people came in, and they just kept rewriting it and rewriting it. And by the end, it just started to sort of get worse and worse and really fall apart. And then Rod Lurie came in, loved the article, and read the script and just couldn't get it set up, didn't like it. And then he said, wait a minute, whatever happened to that script, the original draft that was written by that woman, Allison?
Right.
He said, because he goes, I was up for that job and I lost it to this girl named Allison Burnett. And they said, it's not a woman, and here's his draft. They weren't even going to show him my draft because they never like to admit that the earlier drafts of a script might be better.
Yeah.
Because then it means they spent a lot of money for nothing. Mm-hmm. So they went back to my original, and he really liked it. Then he read a guy that rewrote me, and he liked some of the really original ideas in the second half of this guy's movie. And so Rod rather brilliantly combined the two scripts. So I and the second writer share story and share screenplay.
Michael Bortman, I believe, is that other writer.
That's right.
So he did that himself. He combined the best elements.
Rod Lurie did it on his own. And I've also contributed quite a bit, but for a director at that point, to get credit, he would have to rewrite 51% of the script, and he didn't meet that threshold.
Yeah.
And so what you're really seeing on the screen is one of those rare moments. It happens very rarely where a script in development actually gets made and is good. Usually development just makes the script worse and worse. And because it's getting farther away from the original vision that started the ball rolling. And then Morgan Freeman, they couldn't work out the deal. 3 days later, Sam Jackson said yes. And then 2 weeks later, Morgan Freeman signed on to Feast of Love. So it was a very exciting time for me.
Wow.
Sam Jackson does a great job. I've seen the movie twice. I really love it. I'm going to go to the premiere Wednesday night in L.A. And it's just a really intelligent movie about fathers and sons and ethics. And it's not really a sports movie, I wouldn't say. I think it's more about journalism and ethics and the way that men behave in order to gain respect from their fathers and their sons.
Yeah.
And the ensemble acting is amazing. Alan Alda and David Paymer are great. And Peter Coyote does a character. You know, Peter Coyote is often playing a leading man, and I think sort of blandly. And in this movie, he plays a real character turn, and it's absolutely brilliant. I doubt many people will even recognize him, and he's not even wearing makeup, but the performance is so great, you don't even recognize him.
He is one of our great actors when it comes to playing kind of off-kilter character roles.
Yeah, I think he should do more of that and play the president less. He plays those roles like he played the president in my friend's movie, and I don't think that's what he was meant to do. I think he's really a great character actor.
Oh yeah. I know you've also written for television.
Not a lot. I'm about to pitch my first TV show. I've only I wrote a movie that I wrote for the studios, and it ended up selling and becoming a Lifetime movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I've written like one. I have one TV credit.
Well, we spoke to a television critic last week about the new fall season and some of the trends in TV now, and more you find more and more feature film stars migrating to television because they say that the quality of the writing is better in TV. Would you concur with that statement?
I think what they're probably really thinking about is that very often there's an opportunity to write things for adults.
Mm.
And more movies are being skewed toward kids. And so if you have a choice between writing high-quality TV or writing, the Transformer movie, or even supposedly adult romantic comedies that are so dopey, you know, a lot of people are going to gravitate toward TV. I'm not a fan of network television myself. I don't think there's not a single hour-long show on network that I watch.
Right.
I think it's too conventional. It doesn't interest me, but the HBO, obviously, is like Mecca. It's where everyone wants to work.
Oh, yeah.
Showtime is really making an effort to be better and get closer to the caliber of HBO. FX does some really great stuff, like The Shield and Rescue Me.
Yeah.
So this TV show that I'm going to be pitching, we're only going to pitch to HBO, Showtime, and FX.
Wow!
Yeah, those are the big three. That's who you want behind you.
Yeah.
And Todd Field is attached to direct the pilot if we sell it.
Wow!
Oh wow!
I know, and he's never done a pilot, so I'm hoping that with that package, we will have a good shot at setting this up.
That's a great package.
I know that you're also a highly accomplished writer of fiction, and I was wondering, what does writing fiction do for you that screenwriting that you can't find with screenwriting?
Well, what happened was, you know, Autumn in New York had just had been my calling card for 2 years. That script had gotten me a lot of work and attention, and people were whispering about Oscars and all this stuff. And then suddenly, a few days before shooting, it gets butchered, and the movie comes out, and, you know, it's like a laughing stock among all. Some people really love it, but most people just thought it was sappy. And that was never what it was supposed to be. And it was really demoralizing. And I said, you know, if that happens, if my best script turns into a laughing stock, I'm never going to feel the pride of authorship as a screenwriter. And I'd only really felt it with Red Meat because I wrote it and directed it and I protected it. And I just thought, you know, I've got to do something or else I'm just going to, like, acquire a lot of money. I mean, I had, remember, I've been doing studio work for 15 years, and these scripts are just sitting on shelves, and the development process is just killing them. And, you know, studios make about one movie for every 25 or 30 they develop. So there's a lot of screenwriters that make $1 million a year and never see a word on the screen.
Is that a painful process to or do you just have to learn to let it go?
Well, you know, Raymond Chandler said, when you work for the studios, you should wear your second best suit of clothes artistically and don't care too much.
Right.
And so what it does is it numbs you and it makes you want to invest less and less of what you really love and believe in because you know it's going to get the axe. And so it sort of numbs you and flattens you out. And so that's all changed now because I'm at Lakeshore and I know that every word I write is going to at least be debated and taken seriously. But at that point, we thought there was a strike happening. And I looked, I sort of turned backward to the things I'd written in my 20s where I'd written hundreds and hundreds of pages of fiction that had never seen the light of day. And I began to reimagine some of that old material. And it led to my writing this novel, Christopher. And you know, when I was struggling in my 20s in New York and had made $100 as a writer by the time I was 31 and I was just wallowing in failure, you know, I couldn't get anything going, and here I was now. I had an agent at William Morris, and I finished Christopher, and it went to a big agent in a William Morris agent in New York, and she loved it. I was just shocked because I'd never had any approval for my fiction, and she sold it in about 4 weeks, and it was just the most exhilarating experience. I mean, this was all pre-Lakeshore, so it was like the first time I really had felt the pride of authorship in a long, long time.
Yeah.
And then the book did really well. And so I said, what the hell? And I wrote another book with the same narrator. And the narrator's name is B.K. Troop, and he's a tall, fat, bald, alcoholic, chemically imbalanced, very well-read, very witty, middle-aged gay guy. And in being a straight man, this was kind of a shocking thing that I had the gay narrator. And my agent said, you know, you could do yourself a favor. Don't tell your publisher that you're straight, because they think that they've discovered a new gay writer. So I was in the awkward position, the don't ask, don't tell position, of not talking about my sexuality. For fear of unclearing the deal. And that went on for a while, and then he finally, we had a talk, and he figured it out, and he was great about it. And so the second book came out, it's called The House Beautiful. And that book did well, and now I've written a third one where B.K. Troop, as an old man, comes to Los Angeles and gets involved in a murder mystery. And the books are literary and yet highly comic, which is not a common. Usually American literature, when it's comic, is very disposable, like these sort of chick lit books that get written in great numbers.
Right.
And this is more in the tradition, the English tradition of Martin Amis or Evelyn Waugh, and it's sort of like Confederacy of Dunces in that way, that it kind of touches you, but it's also highly comic. So I love doing that, and I love writing fiction, and I love taking that break. It's going to be harder to find time to take breaks like that, because now Lakeshore is making these movies I'm writing, so that brings me a great deal of satisfaction, and it's going to take a lot of willpower to turn my back on that kind of work and money to go back and write fiction, which doesn't earn anything, really.
Yeah. Do you think you'll ever step behind the camera again to direct?
Well, I hope so. I've adapted Christopher into a screenplay, and John Lithgow has attached himself to play B.K. Troop.
Wow.
Yeah, and he'd be great in that role. I mean, I see why he said yes, because it really is the kind of role that he could knock out of the park. So now we're trying to find a Christopher that will help bring us financing. And that's not easy because there aren't a lot of young actors these days who bring you financing who can really play a young, tortured novelist living in New York.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough. But, you know, if I can get that together, I will be directing that.
Oh, we can't wait for that. And actually, we can't wait for all your works, Resurrecting the Champ and Feast of Love and your script, Untraceable. There, I said it. It's on record.
Yeah, thank you.
Your script.
I'll tell you, Untraceable is a harrowing, terrifying. It is so. It is such a freaky, disturbing movie.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike a lot of these nightmare films that are being made these days, it's actually smart. And it's about a guy that's killing people on the internet live. And the hook that I brought to the movie, which I think it makes it so different, is that the more people who watch the person die online, the faster the person dies. So anyone who logs in to watch is actually a collaborator with the killer.
Oh.
If nobody logged in, he wouldn't be killed.
That says something about our bloodlust, too.
Yeah. That's right. And the killer knows that, and the killer is indicting the public at large for their voyeurism and their bloodlust. And so if the FBI comes forward and says, listen, says to America, listen, you need to know this is not a hoax. This is, you know, this is real. These people are not actors. They are really dying. So please, please do not log on. What happens is that they log on 5 times faster.
Right. Yeah. I would imagine that's how it would happen in reality.
I think so. I like to think so. So I think it's really going to be, and I have not seen it yet, but Tom Rosenberg has and is really excited about it. He thinks Greg Hoblit did a great job.
Oh, well, we can't wait for that. One last question, because we've talked about some of the do's and don'ts earlier in the hour on screenwriting.
Who are you talking to, by the way?
Jim Vines, and you're actually part of his book, The Working Screenwriter.
That's right, yes.
What advice would you give to the fledgling screenwriter?
Well, here's what I'd say. Your career will go a lot better if you're in Hollywood. If you live in L.A., it's mm-hmm. much easier. I don't think classes and books are the solution. If you need to take one, great, but I never took one. I really think that the lessons that you learn as a writer in any form are the lessons you teach yourself through really hard work and trial and error.
Yeah.
Give your work to as many people who are willing to read it as you can and get good criticism and listen to the criticism. That's how you're going to get better. Don't get defensive. I would say just work, write up time, try to live a lot. It doesn't hurt to a lot of young writers, I feel, are just drowning in other movies.
Yes.
But they're not
That's
living.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they see everything in terms of other films. And a lot of young directors are this way, too, and it's so much better to go out and actually have a life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I, as I said, suffered and had 10 years in New York after college, and I've drawn upon those. At a time when I was just, it's like I would have given my right arm to have a career, and yet all that suffering and all that hard work has fueled everything I've done afterward. So by the time I landed in L.A. at 31, I really knew how to write, and I had really lived, and I think that was a great help.
Well, it's paying off for you in spades, because this is a great year for you now.
Yes, it really is.
And,
I want you to know you're the first people that ever noticed.
It sounds like you're doing it right.
I have friends, and I tell them about the year I'm having, and they're like, oh, my God, you must be on the top of the world. The studios are beating down your door. And on them, I go, you know what? No one's noticed. They only care if the movies do well.
Right.
And if one of these movies, you know, The Champ is getting great reviews, and if one of these movies does really well, then the studios will notice. But you're the first people that have ever acknowledged having a good year.
It's a triumph enough just to get something produced that goes relatively unscathed, you know, from your...
Oh, I know. I mean, I'm getting so spoiled, it's just ridiculous.
But without the writer, you don't have a movie. I mean,
that's right. That's
the writer's
most
the
writers,
most important part.
Right, and usually you just dream that one day, you know, you'll have a movie made. Then, once it's made, you go, oh, God, I hope it isn't terrible, you know? Because, you know, I had the Autumn in New York experience, and you go, oh, I hope it's good. So to have these movies not only being made, but have them be good is, like, more than I could ever have dreamt possible.
Do you feel butterflies about Wednesday night's red carpet screening?
I actually don't. I think probably because it really has become Rod Lurie's movie. Mm-hmm. And in case you didn't, and in case anyone had any questions about that, that's what it says. It says a film by Rod Lurie.
He took
the possessory credit.
Right.
So I really do feel, honestly, I feel it's Rod's. I mean, he combined them. He never gave up. It took him a few years to put this together. He did a great job. He's the one that's nervous. I did my work 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm proud of the work I did. I know which parts I wrote. You know, the first act is largely mine, and then after that it's mostly just some ideas of mine, and it's not really much of my dialogue after the first act. And I'm just proud to be part of something that you know, I know is at very worst good. I mean, you know, no, I don't think anyone could call it a bad film, and that's just a good feeling.
Well, we welcome you back to the show anytime in the future, particularly when these other terrific films of yours get released. And it's just been a pleasure speaking to you tonight.
Well, I'll always be willing to appear. And I like to also. It's nice to be able to speak at a forum to where young screenwriters listen, because I'm always reading scripts for younger writers. My theory is do unto others as no one ever did for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to be as supportive as I can, because I know it's a very tough life, and you know, I respect anyone who has the guts to do it. So I'll be willing to be on your show whenever you want.
We thank you so much
for your time.
Sure. Okay. And by the way, just one thing, my website is allisonburnett.com. So if anyone wants to read any more about the books or the movies or anything else, it's all on one website.
Absolutely. Okay.
Great.
Thank you
so much,
guys. Mr. Burnett.
It's a pleasure.
Bye-bye now. That's Allison Burnett, screenwriter to the upcoming Samuel Jackson film, Resurrecting the Champ, and two other very high-profile films on their way. That's it for tonight. We're all done. We actually went a little over.
That's all right. It was an awesome show. I mean, that was really informative.
Yeah, we had a great show. Chris, I guess, and Jerry, I guess we'll see you both Wednesday night.
That's right.
Okay.
It's yet to be determined what we're doing Wednesday night, but we think we have a very exciting guest planned. And then next Sunday night is our two-hour character actor tribute. So it's a good time. I'll see you guys Wednesday night.
All right. Sounds good. Enjoy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.